Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hackenberg play action fake, steps away from pressure, throws it down, wheel route for Polk, got him at the 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Penn State. A 39-yard strike from Christian Hackenberg to Brandon Polk, and the Nittany Lions get on the board first. Diamond dropped it, picked it up, pressure from the backside, down he goes, Garrett Sickles. That was a coverage sack. He had a lot of time that time, and it gave Sickles enough time to barrel in and crush. Play action fake. Hackenberg waits long and deep for Hamilton at the 5. Got it. Touchdown. Penn State perfectly thrown by Christian Hackenberg, and the Nittany Lions take the lead.
Wilkerson comes in motion toward us. Hackenberg turns. Play action. Rolls right. He's got the far corner. Christian Hackenberg's got it. Touchdown, Penn State. The Nittany Lions put together a brilliant drive.
Back goes Cameron. Delivers downfield and intercepted by John Reed of Penn State off the deflection. At the own 48-yard line, John Reed with his second pick of the year.
Hackenberg waits. Takes the snap, wants the throw. Steps up in the pocket, sees it opening to the 5. Dives to the end zone. Touchdown, Penn State. Christian Hackenberg and Jack, a 52-yard drive that we felt was the one that could knock them out, and they got it.
Great to have you with us on this Monday. And a good performance by Penn State. Maybe their best all-around performance of the season so far. Offensively played very, very well. Was it perfect? Is there room to grow? Yes, there's room to grow. But you know what? They played really well. And that is the Christian Hackenberg that we have seen at times at his best. And he, after a 1-for-6 start, he played extremely well after that. Had a couple drops. Overthrew a couple himself, but you're not going to be perfect. And he looked really, really good on Saturday. Running game, keep in mind, you get Nelson back at tackle, big. Laurent, by the way, graded out really well at center. You're still going with your number two center and your third and fourth string running backs, and they got 154 yards rushing in the game. That work, career highs for Nick Scott and Mark Allen. And defensively, another game where they held a team under 300. You're not supposed to be holding teams under 300 yards offense in today's wide-open spread offense era. Yet Penn State has done that on a consistent basis. Danny Pascarella, after a slow start, then really punted well the rest of the day. Return game was blunted a little bit because of how they punted the ball. They only had 2 kickoff returns, which, by the way, that's all you want, or 2 kickoff returns. We know Joe Julius missed the 2 extra points and kicked the 1 out of bounds, which has to be cleaned up. But overall, maybe their best all-around performance of the season at the midway point with number 1 Ohio State Saturday night in Columbus at 8. And yes, it will be the Fowler Herb Street Heather Cox group doing the game on Saturday night. And Maryland, by the way, for those who are wondering, is a 3:30 kickoff on the 24th. And guys, how are you today?
Great. It's supposed to be a blackout in Columbus Saturday night. The last time the Buckeyes have worn black against Penn State was 1994, I believe, and they lost by about 50 points.
I didn't even know that black was in their color scheme at Ohio State.
Must be something novel.
So if they're going to be in black and Penn State's going to be in white, it's going to be like a monochrome game.
Yeah.
Other than the blue numbers. I don't get the black. I don't. I mean, if black was in your color scheme, that makes sense to me. It's like Oregon. Oregon the other day wore gray. Everything was gray. I don't get it. I'm all for special uniforms and stuff like that for one big game a year, whether it be homecoming or senior day or a big matchup. I'm okay with that. But these like multiple uniform combinations, I don't get it.
And again, the show heads toward the abyss. Yeah. All right, so is there anything in the game you want to ask about? Or
listen, I only
have one prerequisite on uniforms. I don't care what you wear. I don't know that you can read the numbers.
Oh,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Believe me.
That's the only. After that, I don't care what you wear. I don't care if you wear gray, blue. I don't care if you wear a clown outfit. As long as you've got numbers that you can read. When they start doing the number where the number's close to the jersey color and things like that, and you're sitting there saying, okay, wait, I might have to do tonight's game based on body type. I'm serious.
No, I agree.
When that happens, that's how you have to do it. You have to go down and say, okay, wait a minute. Okay, which one of the two is the taller receiver? Which one's got a little different build than the other guy does at running back? You know, and you have to start doing things like that to call a game when they're wearing numbers. That becomes a little bit absurd to me. But if they want to wear black jerseys, I guess they have scarlet and gray numerals. As long as I can read them, I don't care. I could care less they wear black helmets, black jerseys. I don't care what their color scheme is. It's irrelevant to me. It's obviously relevant to one of the hosts of the show.
Yes.
It's stupid.
Well, hey, Steve, the one thing, one comment about Saturday's game is this. The pregame prognosticators were saying that the Indiana offensive line may be able to neutralize the strength of the Penn State defense. Its defensive line didn't happen. The play, I thought, by the defensive line against a veteran crew of Hoosiers was pretty spectacular.
Two of those guys, Spriggs and Feeney, are probably going to be drafted. Reed will be interesting, the center, to see whether or not he gets drafted or not. But Penn State thoroughly, completely outplayed them.
They really did.
I mean, completely outplayed them. They did nothing up front that would indicate that they had any control at any moment in the game. They had none the entire day.
And I don't know I can't remember the final rushing statistic by Indiana. But going into, I think, about the fourth quarter, they were at 75 yards or so. And most of those were done with their quarterback some delayed, like, quarterback draws, things like that.
Right.
But they didn't go anywhere as an offensive line opening up holes.
Well, one of the things I talked about going into the game where Penn State had an advantage over Ohio State when it came to playing Indiana was that Diamond had not played a single down in the previous four games for Indiana. So when Sudfeld played that game and then suddenly Sudfeld got hurt, Diamond was pretty effective against them because he's a different style than Sudfeld, and Ohio State was not prepared for that style. At least Penn State knew of the possibility, a strong possibility, that Diamond was going to play. Thus, they were able to prepare for both styles of quarterback during the course of the week, and it paid off because they ended up getting Diamond. And Danny Cameron's too young. I mean, Cameron's a really good prospect, but he's too young in that environment, that moment, that time. And you knew when he got put in that there was no way they were going to come back, with all due respect to the young man, who was a highly recruited kid. This week, you've got to look at Jones and Barrett run things in a similar way, just they're different size guys doing it. They are an interesting team in that they're at 460 yards per game, 230 passing, 230 rushing. Yet America and Columbus believes that they're somewhat out of sync right now. Imagine being out of sync and still being at 460 yards per game. But they have so many great weapons. I think the biggest single loss for Ohio State, with all due respect to what they have, is when Jim Herman took the University of Houston head coaching job. He was the offensive coordinator the last few years who had a really good feel for the personnel and how to utilize it. Joey Bosa is the most decorated player on that team. The best player on that team to me is Ezekiel Elliott. And he's a guy that, if I had to pick one guy that worries me more than anybody else in this game, that's him.
Well, they've not completely stumbled, but I know on Saturday, as they were announcing the away, the other Big Ten scores, when it was announced Ohio State 21, Maryland 21 in the third quarter, I think there was a collective audible gasp in Beaver Stadium.
Well, I think part of that was not the fact that the game was tied then between the two, but because of the situation in Maryland. I think a lot of people thought that Maryland might lay down, considering what was going on with Randy Edsall, who eventually was fired. And Mike Locksley's going to take over. I think they have a bye week this week, so the first game he'll be the interim head coach will be when they play Penn State in Baltimore. And that's going to be a 3:30 kick.
Just announced that today, yeah. Down at Ravens Stadium, by the way, not at College Park.
Right. And that's going to be a heavy Penn State crowd there because Maryland has not been drawing well at home. There's been a lot of issues going on in this. Will Greer, by the way, suspended today for PED use, the Florida quarterback. Harris takes over the rest of the way. It's something he bought evidently over the counter. Did not run it by the Florida trainers. He's going to be out one calendar year. He's not just out for the season. He's out one calendar year. And because it's leap year, it's 366 days, not 365. So that's a big one because Florida's 6-0 right now, and he's been a primary reason why. Kevin, back to the uniforms. Thoughts?
No, I shared all my thoughts on the uniforms.
Now, is there anything else?
Yeah, if you noticed, one thing we talked about on Friday, I asked you, did some of Christian Hackenberg's stats have to do with the weather-related issues he's been playing in? And I thought a dry game really had an opportunity to show that he is, that, don't worry, he is the Christian Hackenberg everybody thought he was. He didn't regress or anything like that. He's just been playing in tough conditions.
I'm still not buying that. I'm not buying that at all, to be honest with you.
I see him every day, so I'll take that, you know.
A lot of this has to do with the style of play they felt they had to play to win, to get to a certain point. What do I consider to be the most important part going into any game? What are the matchups? All right. Now, I know this has nothing to do with uniform color.
Any of that stuff.
Fantasy points and things like that. I know what I talk about is just stupid football stuff. But on my stupid football board, it's matchups that mean everything. This matchup, and I talked about this last week going in, was really great for what Penn State wanted to do with the deep ball. And that's why I talked about it last week, taking shots downfield. Because with their secondary and better protection now up front. I know he got sacked four times, but better protection up front to go with some of the matchups they could exploit downfield. I felt that they could have a huge day going downfield, whether it's raining or not. He threw for 454 yards in Ireland, and it was not exactly a day like Saturday.
You know, Steve, the thing that was disconcerting was the number of dropped passes that I thought Hackenberg was, for the best way to say it, was on target on a number of passes that end up being incomplete through no fault of Christian's ability to find the open guy.
Well, look, in full disclosure here, before San Diego State, the Thursday before San Diego State, now he threw for, 296 in that game?
Yeah.
He had a practice on Thursday. Okay, I do not see what I call, over my lifetime, a lot of mind-blowing practices. That was, I sat back and went, oh my goodness. He missed nothing on Thursday before San Diego State. And I said to Jack, I said, watch out. I said, we'll see what 48 hours does, but he was leading guys into yards after the catch. He was dropping the ball in over coverage. I mean, I said, he literally made every throw where you sat back and went, well, isn't that interesting? Now, against Army, they played a little close to the vest, but he had a practice week last week that was similar to what I saw before San Diego State. And I said to Jack, I said, 14's ready. Here we go. Now, Now I realize it wasn't raining and Penn State was wearing its throwback jerseys.
Excellent point.
So,
you know,
I try to include all the Kevin points in the show.
Steve,
I'm going home.
The one thing that was interesting was,
I'm done.
And Kevin played it in the intro when Christian Hackenberg dove for the running touchdown toward the end of the game. From my perspective, he was making a statement with that as well as.
He's playing loose and free, and he's making good judgments.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what you know, and that's what that showed me on that particular play. Indiana wore the IU on one side and the State of Indiana flag on the other side. Kev,
yeah,
just want to make sure.
Hey, by the way, in the Major League Baseball score, top of the seventh inning, Houston is leading Kansas City 3-2.
All right. Stanley Jackson of BTN is going to join us today at 3:35. Since Joe Susan has to be moved to Wednesday, they're practicing today, correct?
Yes, they're on the field from 3 to 5 today, getting ready for Army.
Ah.
You're going to go to one of the beautiful, truly picturesque stadiums on an October 17th day, the middle of October, where the trees overlooking the Hudson River will be at their absolute finest. You're going to have the single most beautiful view in college football on Saturday.
Yeah, it'll be a great tweet the view. So I'm looking forward to that. The last time I was there was in January or February for basketball. So I went by the stadium, but I didn't get a chance to see anything about it or in it. So it'll be fun.
You know, and West Point is
They weren't going to let you in anyway.
The good news is all my clearances have been pushed through and we're good to go.
Well, that tells you about how much better I feel about Homeland Security.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, they didn't check all the computer data. I mean.
Yeah, we'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The Sunbury Motors Kia is a spooktacular sales event for a limited time only.
What does a spooky deal mean?
Really, really good and spooky.
Just stop. But yes, the deals at Sunbury Motors Kia are spooky good this month. But not because of Halloween. Kia has authorized us to provide employee pricing on all models this month. Plain and simple, you pay invoice minus all factory incentives on every model we have. That means the very best deals of the year from the dealer you already know to give you great deals year-round. Big savings on the 7-passenger Sereno SUV, the agile handling and first-class features of the Sportage, and the fuel-sipping Optima. Plus, with 0% financing available and a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty, these deals are scary good.
Now, that's the holiday spirit!
Owning a brand-new Kia is more affordable than ever at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf and at sunburymotors.com.
Hi, this is Susan Purdy. For over 85 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. Our trained and knowledgeable staff has centuries of experience, so rest assured your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 286-5855, check us out online at purdyinsurance.com, or visit us on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
To the bottom of the hour, then Stanley Jackson, BTN, is going to join us. We'll talk about uniform color, helmet color.
Oh, this is good stuff now.
Excellent.
And also the novelty of the 4-3 defense.
There we go. Got that in there. Feel better now?
Yeah.
You've had quite a 2 weeks.
Yeah, he will never mention the 4-3 defense as a novel high school defense ever again, Kevin.
Well, Shigley, we played that 4-3 much better this last week on Friday night, I can tell you that.
I mean, that's twice in 3 weeks?
Yeah.
It was twice this season, which I don't think I've seen it twice in a season in maybe a decade.
It just hasn't been your season
no.
so far.
He can't wait for basketball.
No. I'm still good with football right now.
All right.
I'm not ready for basketball's I still got a lot of football to go yet.
All right.
You're home the next 2 weeks, right?
Yipper.
This is when you get that Halushki or whatever that's called?
No. That's when you go to Mount Carmel in the Silver Bowl.
When's that?
No, we don't do that anymore.
So you've been a Halushki ass all season?
I have. Yeah,
taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Does it bother you what I care and don't care about?
No, not at all. I've gotten used to it.
Hey, like, you get all worked up about what color the Ohio State uniforms are. I could care less.
No, I don't think I got upset. As a matter of fact, I didn't even bring it up. It was Buhner that brought it up. I just said that I thought it was dumb that they're going to be wearing black uniforms. I didn't even know that was even in their color scheme. I mean, if they did all today, scarlet, that would make sense.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served the Valley for decades because they care about each and every customer. It's personalized service. Best insurance, best price for each of you. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15, Hummelsworth. Time now to bring in Stanley Jackson from BTN. Stanley, welcome back to the show. It is great to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Ohio State is interesting in a lot of ways. You played there, and from the outside looking in the times I've been there, whether it's for football or basketball, I've always felt like that's the one school in this conference that's covered like a pro team. Accurate or inaccurate?
I think it's very accurate. Part of the reason is because the university is so big, the fan base is so large, and then there's no pro football team in the 15th largest city in the country. So it's a lot of reporting to do about sports, and so Ohio State football gets the bulk of that because they have been so good for so long, and I think that's pretty accurate and honest. The only negative to that, though, is, I mean, the expectation sometimes is a little unrealistic for a college football team.
All right, now you look at Ohio State, 460 yards in total offense, 230 each way. Yet there is a sense that they're not quite in sync yet. If that is how you feel about it, where aren't they in sync?
Well, I think there's a number of answers to that question. And number one, if you look at what the University of Houston is doing now with Coach Tom Herman as their head coach and
exactly.
How efficient their offense is, I think that gives you a picture as to why you see Ohio State sputtering a little bit. I mean, he was their play caller and what I would call their quarterback whisperer. And that's the position that has struggled a little bit throughout this season. I think it got back on track last week, playing both guys with JT Barrett in the red zone. Cardale Jones had career numbers in completions of 299 yards, 2 touchdowns, and the biggest stat was no interceptions. So now that they're getting comfortable with the play calling, I think the team will get better. And here's the reality. When you're the number one team in the country, you're always going to get the best shot of the opponent. And when I watch the teams that Ohio State has played so far, Northern Illinois, Hawaii, Virginia Tech, the best game that all those teams have played this year is against Ohio State. So I think sometimes you have to be a little patient, especially when you have, you know, significant changes with play calling and coaching. When you take, you know, probably the best offensive line coach and give him more responsibility, there's going to be growing pains, and that's what the Buckeyes have experienced. But it seems like they're back on track now because last week was the best offensive performance they've had.
What kind of help does it give any offense when Ezekiel Elliott is almost as good with the football as he is without the football?
He's fantastic. I mean, when you look at backs and you look at their attributes, and you know, you think one guy doesn't have it all, but he's one guy that comes pretty close. He's got great balance. His vision is unbelievable. He'll run between the tackles. If he gets to the second level, he will take it the distance. He's been hurling guys as of late. And then he's outstanding in pass protection. So he is a guy that has the full complement of assets. He's a great back and amongst a lot of really good backs in this conference. And so when you're a quarterback and you know you can hand the ball off and you can stay on schedule with the guy or break a big run, that's a big help. And he is the reason why Ohio State won a national championship. I don't want anybody to be confused about that. I know the quarterback gets a a lot of praise, but that offensive line and Ezekiel Elliott running for 200 yards a game is by far the reason why they won it all.
Now, what are your thoughts as you've watched Christian Hackenberg and Penn State offensively, especially against San Diego State and against Indiana?
Well, listen, the thing that jumps out is the way they've been able to protect Christian a little more. You know, I mean, they went from being a team that led the country in sacks a year ago, and quite frankly, it looked like they would do it again after that Temple game, and they figured out a way of how to keep him upright. Number one, they've been running the ball a lot better. You still hope that they can get healthy at that position. But, you know, I think they're doing some things different. They're not asking Christian to take 5- and 7-step drops and hold the ball for 15- to 18-yard routes. They're incorporating the screen game, allowing him to throw the quick game, and that creates a rhythm. And then you see at the end of games, he's a lot more confident, you know, because it's hard when you're getting hit at the quarterback position. You start to see ghosts, start to move when you shouldn't. You don't trust your line anymore. So the fact that they've kept him, for the most part, you know, upright, I think is the biggest factor to why he's playing better. And he's finally starting to look like the kid we saw 2 years ago as a freshman who went on the road in the last game of the year and knocked off a ranked Wisconsin team. And that's what they're going to need. He's got to play at a high level if they're going to be able to compete with some of these dominant teams in the East.
When Saquon Barkley has been out there, what has impressed you?
Well, number one, he is a freshman that breaks a lot of tackles and makes a lot of guys miss. I don't think the offensive line is healed. I still see challenges there. I still see, you know, Saquon in particular, you know, making guys miss in the backfield. So that says something to you. But he reminds me a lot of Maurice Clarett.
Yeah.
You know, a guy that's really young and that can do a lot on his own. And that's always very helpful when you can make up for a missed block. And that's what he does well. He breaks a lot of tackles. And then again, he's got it all too. He can take it the distance if he gets to the edge. He's got great vision. His balance is unbelievable. And it's just, it's hard to believe that these kids are so good at such a young age.
All right, let's go two units here. What are your thoughts on the linebacking core for Ohio State?
I think they're arguably maybe the best core in the country.
Yep.
And they've got everything you want in linebackers. They've got size, they've got speed, they've got agility, they've got a guy that blitzes extremely well, they cover well in space. And the thing that's helping them the most is, you know, any great linebacker, I'll tell you, the most important guys are the ones in front of me. Because if they can keep me clean, if they can demand a double team or a triple team, that allows me to flow. I play downhill, you know, maintain my gap integrity and make tackles, and then that's impressive to me. Raekwon McMillan, the youngest of the group, you know, is averaging somewhere around 14 tackles a game. So they just got a really good core group of linebackers, and that's been the catalyst behind their defensive success this year.
Now, Penn State's defensive line, what are your thoughts on that unit?
Yeah, it's just amazing that every year, I mean, maybe I thought it was, you know, Coach Larry Johnson for a while because he had so many dominant guys up front that go on to have great NFL careers. But maybe it's just in the water there at Happy Valley because they always seem to find a guy up front that gets it done. And it's the same thing here. I mean, their defense is as good as anybody in the country. You love the way they get after the passer. They're tough against the run. And again, you know, it's great to have secondary guys. It's great to have good linebackers. But the reality is it's up front that creates all that. And Penn State's as good as anybody in the country. And Ohio State will be challenged this week up front. There's no question about it. There's a lot of question marks for Ohio State's offensive line. They're a little banged up, and they will be tested this weekend.
The season is at the halfway mark. I mean, there'll still be bye weeks for everybody. But for the most part, 6 games in the book with 6 to play across the board. What are a couple of storylines that have surprised you during the course of the season and maybe a couple that have played out exactly the way you thought they would?
Well, I'll start with what I thought would happen is Michigan. I fully expected Michigan to win 9 games this year. And I, you know, looking at the defense they had a year ago, getting Peppers healthy and then bringing in a coach that was going to slow down what they do offensively and not turn the ball over, I thought they could be very competitive in year one under Coach Harbaugh. And I think it's proven that out. I mean, he has them playing at a high level. The defense is really good. And getting a veteran quarterback in Jake Rudock, I think, has helped now that he's settled down and he's comfortable in their system.
Right.
So I'm good there. I am a little surprised about Nebraska. I thought Blackshirt's defense would come to play this year. They've been really bad. And then in the last 2 weeks, their offense there's a lot of trouble getting going. And sometimes you got to be careful what you wish for. When you fire a coach that's won 9 games in the last 5 years, only 4 programs have done that, the expectation may be higher than it should. You bring a new coach in who's a good guy but changes some things, then you're going to experience some pains and some struggles, and that's where Nebraska is. So if I had to pick 2 teams to be really surprised about, I think it's those two. Everybody else, I think, is what I fully expected. I thought Michigan State would have some struggles. It's hard to continue to replace guys that are playing on Sundays. And in the last 3 years, Michigan State's put a lot of guys in the NFL. I thought Ohio State would have some growing pains offensively because you just can't, you know, it's hard to replace offensive geniuses. And they'd had to do that with Coach Herman. And so everybody else, I think, is right where they would be. I did not expect Penn State to lose to Temple. Let me say that. I thought they'd be undefeated at this point during the season. But but I think the season has played out so far like you could expect.
Stanley, you mentioned in talking about Nebraska, Mike Riley's M.O. at Oregon State, because Penn State did play them back in 2008, so you get a little better feel about, you know, a brief part of their history, is that sometimes they do start slow and they get better as the season goes along. But even with that, that's still surprising, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you expect them to win a couple of those games early, especially after you've seen these teams play other opponents. And it doesn't get any easier for them. You know, that's the challenge. It's, you know, out at Oregon State, maybe it got a little easier. I mean, there's only maybe a handful of teams out of Pac-12 the last 15 years that have been good. Even this is probably the best Pac-12 we've seen in a while. So maybe it was easier going up against Washington, has been down for a long time, or Utah, or, you know, teams that they've added, or Cal, who now looks better. But in the Big Ten, it's a little different now. I mean, look how well Illinois is playing. I mean, who just knocked off Nebraska a week ago. You know, Penn State has improved. In the East, you got Michigan playing well. Michigan State, Ohio State is playing well. Rutgers is not a bad football team. And Iowa now has emerged. That's offensively, they're a lot more potent. The defense is playing great. Northwestern's defense, still, you don't have to lose to Michigan, is one of the top 10 defenses in the country. And, so when you look at Nebraska and you just lost to Wisconsin, I mean, where do those wins come in? Even Purdue, with their struggles, even Purdue is improving. And Minnesota, when they get healthy on defense, they get after you. So, I mean, I think there's going to be some challenges for Nebraska this year. Losing some of those early games hurts you. Yeah, you got to come through the preseason 3-1, at least, in my opinion. To be able to have an opportunity to sort of make a bowl game. But when you lose more in the preseason than you win, that's a problem.
Right. Stanley Jackson with us, BTN, joining us. Before this month is out, Penn State will end up playing a total of, well, they have 6 now, so they have 9 games. 3 of the 9 will be against teams with interim head coaches. Illinois, Rutgers for the time being, and, of course, Maryland coming up a week from Saturday. We know about the Illinois situation and how that happened, and we know about the Rutgers situation. How do you feel about a team firing a coach in college in midseason?
Well, listen, I don't like it. I don't think any of us like when a coach loses his job. I mean, when coaches take jobs, their families are ingrained into the community. Their kids are in school. You know, their wives do things with players. And it's always sad to see you not letting the guy finish it. But every program has to make decisions based on what they think is best for them. And when you have boosters who aren't happy, especially guys that write really big checks, and that tends to sway an administration. Right? So you got the founder of Under Armour there who's going to write a large check, who thinks they ought to go in a direction of finding an offensive coach, and people have to listen to them. You know, right now they're trying to raise $125 million to build a new facility. Well, you can't do that if your boosters aren't happy. Right. And then, you know, from a locker room standpoint, I think there's some players that maybe he's lost because he's old in his philosophy. He's, you know, somewhat rigid, and he's got a high expectation. And so when you lose the locker room and the boosters aren't happy, then sometimes administrations think that's an opportunity for change. And it's unfortunate for everybody involved because now as an assistant coach, you know, you're wondering if the assistant coaches are going to continue to do the best they can for the University of Maryland, or are they making calls now knowing that they won't be there next year?
So
this affects a lot of people. I never like it when it happens in the middle of the season, but, you know, they're the second team to do that this year in the Big Ten. Bill Cuba has done a phenomenal job, I think, at Illinois, and we'll have to see what happens in Maryland.
Yeah. Well, Illinois, I think, probably was between a rock and a hard place on that one. That comes down to other things besides just the football field. So that's a totally different situation.
It is. And here's a you know, this is just what blows me away. I mean, college football has changed so much as far as the expectation goes. Last year, we were celebrating Maryland as really having the better effort out of the two new teams who joined the conference.
No question. I mean,
they really did well. They made a bowl game. They knocked off some of the blue bloods in the conference. And just a year later, you know, we fired their coach because we're not happy with where the football team is. They've had the biggest drop-off in season ticket sales. You know, they've got an empty stadium. So a lot of those things, I think, are playing into this. But it's just amazing that a year ago, everybody was really high on Maryland sports.
Penn State goes down to Baltimore next week, so it'll be very interesting to see how many Penn State fans are at M&T Bank Stadium versus Maryland fans.
I mean, I guarantee there'll be a lot of a lot of white and blue in that stadium.
Yeah. All right. So now the second half. In the second half of this season, which is also the three quarters of the Big Ten season still to be played, what are some things you'll be watching for that'll be indicators for you?
Well, first thing, I think we get a great snapshot week one of who's going to win the East, right? You got Michigan State and Michigan, and Penn State and Ohio State. I mean, you got the top four teams in division going at it head-to-head this week. And whoever comes out of this weekend unscathed, those two teams are in pole position to win the East. And so for me, yeah, I think it's a great weekend of college football in the Big Ten. And then I'm just curious to see who comes out of the West. I know Iowa's probably leading the charge right now after knocking off Wisconsin a week ago, and then Wisconsin knocks off Nebraska. But, you know, look, Northwestern is still really good. They can figure out some things on the offensive end. I think they can challenge any of those teams in the West. And so I'm still curious to see who comes out, because I think the Eastern winner really needs one of those teams to run its course, and you'd love for it to be Iowa. And this is why I'm saying that, because all the arguments about how weak the Big Ten is, which I completely disagree with it, but if you can run through a gauntlet, if you're Michigan State, right, and you can beat Ohio State, who's ranked number one, you can beat Michigan, who's now ranked in the top 15, you can beat Penn State that, who knows, maybe try to sneak in the back door, they got a couple votes this week, and then you can knock off an unbeaten, ranked Iowa. Nobody else in the country can argue that you don't belong. And
right.
That's for any team, I think, out of the East that can go through that gauntlet and then win the Big Ten championship. You will guarantee yourself a spot in the playoffs.
Yeah, I completely agree with that sentiment, that having a good team out of the West with a good resume and the Eastern team wins, that really is a big boost. You know, just what they need. Stanley, thanks so much. Appreciate the time, as always. Always great insight from you. We appreciate it.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. I love doing it. Look for the next call.
Stanley Jackson, BTN, and we'll come back with more of the Kevin Herr uniform intriguing defense get-together in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Well, Captain Cheap Shot Chase Utley, buy some time. Let's figure out Major League Baseball if we can. The office is in New York. The Dodgers are in New York.
Sounds convenient
to
me.
The series is in New York. Chase Utley's in New York. But we didn't have time to hear the appeal. He'll play tonight. He should be suspended for every game that the other player misses plus one.
For that legitimate slide that he went into second base on, that baseball players have been doing for,
ever?
Since Abner Doubleday was around.
If you'd like, I can give you the Jung Ho Gung family number in Korea. You can call them and explain how Chase Utley took his season out, too.
And by golly, you know what? Now you're hitting home. I agree. Utley has not been punished severely enough because he took out my pirate, that's for sure.
Hey, listen, if you're going to start finding guys for hard slides and takeout slides at second, start calling interference at the during the game. Umpires aren't calling it. I blame the umpires. If it's a judgment call, make the call.
Make it.
Now, did he slide late?
Absolutely.
Was it at the bag? No.
No.
Is it is it suspendable? I don't think so. You can't call, and nobody's called it all year long. Why is it a suspension now?
I'd suspend him for every game the other player misses plus one. Every game Tejada's out, Utley doesn't play.
Then from this point forward, they need to start calling it on the field.
They don't. Umpires do not call it. It's rarely
called.
Excuse
me. Kevin. Okay? As somebody who runs Major League Baseball, which is in the position I would be in right now, I just took care of it.
Problem solved again.
Okay? Guess what? Guess how they slide in next year, knowing that that's the rule. Oh, stunner.